40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Thursday night when the Cleveland Cavaliers host the Toronto Raptors in Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Cavs crushed the Raptors in Game 1, 115-84. It was the largest playoff win in Cleveland club history. The Cavaliers are hoping to return to the NBA Finals, where they might be headed for a rematch against the reigning champion Golden State Warriors. The Warriors cruise to a 118-91 victory over the visiting Oklahoma City Thunder Wednesday night to even the Western Conference Finals at one game each. And remember, VOA basketball fans, all of the series in the NBA playoffs are best of seven games. Stephen Curry, the NBA's two-time reigning league most valuable player, once again led the way for the Warriors. Steph tallied 28 points, including a two-minute stretch in the third quarter when he scored 15 consecutive points for Golden State. Warriors coach Steve Kerr comments on Curry's sharp shooting.
Yeah, that was kind of the key stretch in the game, you know, mid-third quarter. They were playing well. They had some momentum, and, you know, Steph really got loose. And that's, as I said, that's what Steph does. And when he can find some space and get a few threes to go down in front of our home crowd, you know, it's a huge boost.
Coach Steve Kerr also got a huge boost from his reserve players, including his big backup center from Benin City, Nigeria, Festus Ezeli. Festus scored 12 points and also grabbed 5 rebounds. At the post-game news conference, Ezeli had this to say.
Game 1 was not our best game. We came in with a better focus tonight. The bench did. I mean, Andre was big for us tonight defensively, especially on KD. And, you know, most spaces, he's going to do what he does, more buckets. So the bench was huge for us. Barbosa, Sean, everybody came in, they contributed. You know, even when I got in foul trouble, Bogues was in foul trouble as well. And Varejao came in, you know, in the first quarter. So everybody contributed tonight. It's a whole total team effort, better focus than we had game 1. And I just hope to continue that focus.
Festus Ezeli and the Warriors are now focused on Game 3 of the NBA's Western Conference Finals, which will be played Sunday night in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Meanwhile, the National Hockey League playoffs, like the NBA playoffs, is down to the final four teams, and the competition for hockey's fabled Stanley Cup couldn't be tighter. At this point, just one goal could make or break a team's entire season. Joining us now in Studio 22 is VOA's in-house hockey fanatic, Doug Bernard. Welcome back, Doug.
Great to see you, Sonny.
Doug, who's left standing now in the NHL playoffs?
So we have four teams in the Eastern and Western Conference. In the Eastern Conference, it's down to the Pittsburgh Penguins facing off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. We'll just call them the Pens and the Bolts from now on. And then in the Western Conference, you have the St. Louis Blues and the San Jose Sharks. Interestingly, in that conference, there were a number of Stanley Cup players, winning teams that were eliminated, both the Blues and the Sharks, have never won a Stanley Cup. So for those two teams on that side, whoever actually makes it to the finals, this is a big moment.
So, Doug, how are these semifinals playing out right now?
They're playing out, if you will, I think a little bit according to the script. What we've seen, and you so often see this in playoff hockey, is that the teams that are, one, have the speed, and two, have the solid defense. Because, you know, as you said, I mean, at this point, one goal will make or break a game, and one game, you know, could end the series, as it were. It's just like in basketball, it's best of seven. So the games have been playing at a increasing speed over the years. We're seeing teams that are younger, have a little bit more wheels on their legs, as it were, I think are getting a little bit of the upper hand. We're certainly seeing that, at least in the Eastern Conference, where the Pens are facing off against the Bolts. The Bolts of a little slower team, a little bit kind of more of a heavy, you know, grinded out sort of team that I think in some ways comes from their general manager, Steve Yzerman, legendary Red Wing player. And the Pens, however, are the team with the wheels right now, and they're looking really good out there.
Which teams right now look like they have the momentum or the juice?
Well, again, I think in the Eastern Conference, it's looking like the Penguins might have the edge. And I say that in part because, you know, this is a kind of surprise. They had a terrible season. The injuries just plagued this team. So for the first really two-thirds of the regular season, they just weren't performing anywhere near the expectations, especially with all of the talent and all the money that they're shelling out for these guys. But this team has gotten hot at the right moment. We saw this in the playoff with the contest between the Pens and the Washington Capitals. The Washington Capitals, best team by a long shot in regular season hockey this year, and the Pens just really outskated them. So they're getting hot at the right moment. I think on the other side, this is really interesting. I had secretly kind of been thinking that the Blues might take it all the way to the finals this year. A lot of people laughed that off. But in fact, that is more of an even matched series, I would say. So we're watching what's happening in the West with a lot of interest.
Doug, you mentioned the Capitals, and I know a lot of disappointed ice hockey fans here in Washington.
You're looking at one.
Did you think the Capitals would make it to this stage?
I did. And you know something? I was at an event before the playoffs began with Joe Beninati, who is the play-by-play guy for the Washington Capitals and their TV broadcast partner. And Joe's a very loquacious guy, and he kept, you know, people were sort of wringing their hands. And Joe was, he's like, don't worry about it. This team's got that. That's what a lot of people were saying. And so I think it really did come as a bit of a heartbreak this time. And it wasn't a case of choke. You know, we've heard that a lot with some teams in the past. They choke. They can't make it through the playoffs. I don't think this team choked. I think this team was doing everything right. They just did not have puck luck. They, you know, sometimes the hockey gods are cruel. Mm. And, you know, just one, you know, fluke goal, and, well, there goes the series.
Doug, at this stage of the playoffs, four teams left. Are there any players worthy of some shout-outs on The Voice of America?
There's a number of players, and there's certainly in the Western Division. I think what's fascinating here is, you know, perhaps in years past, we've looked for some of the big stars. You know, I don't know, Wayne Gretzky or Steve Yzerman or, you know, all these kinds of people. And these guys, you could even say maybe Alex Ovechkin for the Capitals. These are guys that were just toweringly powerful players and would, you know, kind of carry their team. We're not seeing that this year. I think we're really seeing genuine teamsmanship and talent distributed across the base. So you're seeing, you know, they're hockey, you play three offensive players and two defensive players on the ice at every time. And so you're seeing really good balance between defense actually moving the puck. You're seeing good forechecking. So I would hesitate to say that any one player has had a breakout. A few have been having a disappointing season, but we're not really seeing, you know, the star yet emerge.
Let's talk nicknames for a little bit, Doug.
Okay.
Sharks. I don't really see a shark being out there on the ice.
and the Sharks have one of the greatest gimmicks on hockey. When their team comes out, you know, and takes the ice, it's always an exciting moment in a home arena. When the Sharks take the ice, they actually come out through this enormous shark maw, you know. But San Jose is obviously California. It's close to the ocean, and so it was an allusion to that.
Okay.
And you want to, you know, it's better than the, I guess, the goldfish or something, or the marlins or something.
Doug, every major sport has its finals and trophies.
Yep.
What makes the Stanley Cup different or special?
Well, it's several reasons. I think, one, it's the oldest of any of the professional trophies in the United States. And, of course, it's not just the United States teams that are eligible to play for it. So having your name inscribed on that is, I think, for players, a powerful moment. They actually get all of their names, and you can see all of the names of all the previous winning teams on there. The second thing is, very quickly, it's cup tradition that every player on the winning team gets a full day with the cup to do whatever they want with. So some take it to friends' houses, some take it in the pool, some put it on parade. That is a really kind of special tradition.
And maybe put some beverages in it?
Well, we've seen a lot of that, too.
VOA's Doug Bernard, thanks for the ice hockey update, Doug.
Oh, great to be with you.
Well, if you tuned in to Wednesday's Sunny Side of Sports show, you heard how London Marathon champions Eliud Kipchoge and Jemima Sumgong have been named to Kenya's Olympic team for the Rio Games in August. The energetic Andy Edwards caught up with both Kenyan athletes after their victories last month in the British capital. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, let's listen in again to Andy's conversations with the Kenyans. Here's Andy.
I'm talking with Eliud Kipchoge, who achieved one of the great marathon wins in history in London, winning the London Marathon 2016. And, of course, a lot of people anticipating what could happen in the Olympic marathon in Rio later this year. Eliud, it's 6 wins out of 7 for you in the marathon. And having seen quite a lot of your track career as well, thinking of 2003, that 5,000-meter world championship win against Kenenisa Bekele in Paris, it struck me this was your most dominating performance, dominating win. Now, am I wrong? What do you? You're the man who did it. What do you think?
I think you are right. I really competed for 10 years in track, and although I had a lot of competition, but I think I can sum it in marathon that I enjoyed the marathon than the track, yes.
You seem not only in control of your body, you look so relaxed, even when you're pressing hard and running, well, world record pace, but also in your mind. I mean, it's... Was yesterday in London a marathon where everything went right for you?
Actually, everything went right for me. I won, and I break a course record. That's what was in my mind.
When you look ahead to the Olympics, do you, in a sense, leave aside everything you've done so far? I mean, do you start afresh in terms of planning?
Not really, but... immediately, I'll be given a green light on Olympics. Then I'll sit down with my coach and plan for August. So everything sometimes will change because, it's, you know, Olympics is sooner. Yes.
Would you take into account any particular conditions, weather conditions or road surface in Rio or for any other big race? Or do you kind of leave that to when you get there?
I hope weather will be a problem in Rio, but I don't have to say much because I think all the athletes from the whole world will be facing the same condition. And I can say I'm going there to compete and run and try to win. Because we are in the same condition, nobody is running under maybe cold or hot, but all of us will be in the same condition, so it's okay.
And just lastly, I remember after you won Berlin Marathon last autumn, you talked about the importance of the mind being fresh. That I think, to quote you, is something like, if the body's a bit tired, you can recover faster, but if your mind is stale, then it takes longer. How does the mind feel now?
The mind is good, and that's what, you know, I say last year that it's better for the body to get tired than the mind. For us to actually to cure the mind is really a big work. needs a psychologist to talk to. But if the mind is all right, then you are in the right direction. For me, the mind is okay, and I'm working well.
Well, from what we've seen of you so far, Eliud Kipchoge, yeah, you're being pretty good as your own psychologist. All the best for the Olympic Marathon in Rio. Eliud Kipchoge, the champion of London Marathon 2016. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Energetic Andy also caught up with London women's champion Jemima Sumgong. Once again, here's Andy.
Kenya's Jemima Sumgong produced one of the great recoveries in women's distance running and marathon running to win the 2016 London Marathon after she'd fallen and been involved in a fall and banged her head and really shed a lot of guts in coming back, not only to complete the race, but to win it. Jemima, when something like that goes wrong in a race, how do you recover? Is it a case of all those years of training and determination that you call upon? Because, let's face it, some runners might have said, oh, well, I'm hurt, I'm giving up, but you didn't.
No. That cannot make us to lose the spirit of winning. That's first thing, it was a challenge. So in Kenya, back home, we have different tribes. My tribe is Kalenjin. So first thing, when you get a challenge, that means there is a successful in front of you. So we just believe when you get a challenge, there is a successful in front of you. So when I just punked my head, that was first challenge. And I knew this is now a belief that I'm going to win. Also, it's a matter of training. Back home, Kenya, we can go through hardships through training. So someone can fall down, wake up, and go. So it's just a matter of, it's normal.
That sounds like a mix of course, you've got to do the training. There's no point, if you're not fit, just saying, I'm going to do this. But also a kind of cultural belief. I mean, to be honest, I've heard it said sometimes somebody who's a Kalenjin who is unfit and then starts to run and then discovers they have great talent, and then somebody else says, oh, well, that's because you're a Kalenjin. You're a good runner because all Kalenjins are good runners. But am I wrong in suggesting that?
No. Oh, I can say not even a tribal like Kalenjins, when they get a challenge, it's a belief that you will win alone. No matter the training you have taken, always when you are coming to a race, you are well prepared from mind, heart, and even physically. You are well fit. So why don't you race and win?
Well, you certainly did that. What about the future, that Olympic marathon in Rio? Would you think of preparing any differently to how you've prepared for London? And indeed, you're an experienced marathon runner. You've had very consistent results, but this was your first big win. Would you change your preparation because it's an Olympic marathon?
No. I will not change because Olympic is also a major marathon like this one of London. So I must go with what I did so that I can excel like the way I excel in London.
Could there even be a danger for some people? If they're selected for the Olympic marathon, they think they have to train harder. They put in more effort because, you know, looking over the years, I've been covering track and field for 30-odd years, you get some people who say, oh, it's the Olympics, I'm going to train harder than ever before. And sometimes they get ill, they get injured because they get distracted.
Yeah, usually when you get a challenge, when you are being selected, it's not a matter of you are going now to put more effort so that you can do it well. No, just do the way the program is. Do the way your body responds. Do what you are doing. Do not change anything because you can make it to be worse. You can get injuries. You can even lose going to Rio because of changing the program.
Well, Jemima Sumgong, let's hope you bring that Kalenjin spirit and all your training to that Olympic marathon in Rio.
Thank you very much. See you.
That's Jemima Sumgong of Kenya, who won the women's title at the London Marathon last month. Jemima has been selected for Kenya's Olympic marathon team for the Rio Games, and she was talking with the energetic Andy Edwards in London. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. What's trending in the sports world on this Thursday?
Well, we've got some breaking news on social media that Roger Federer has announced that he is pulling out of the French Open. Mm. French Open, of course, the famous red clay tournament at Roland Garros, set to start this Sunday. And Federer posted on his Facebook page, he said, I regret to announce that I have made the decision not to play in this year's French Open. I've been making steady progress with my overall fitness, but I'm still not 100%, and I feel I might be taking an unnecessary risk by playing in the event before I'm really ready. And he goes on to talk a little bit about his fitness level and his comfort. He's had some back issues, and he says, I'm sorry for my fans in Paris, but I very much look forward to returning to Roland Garros in 2017. Now, he posted this just about an hour ago. It already has over 92,000 reactions on Facebook. A lot of them, not just likes, but also now on Facebook you can do sad or wow. So you're seeing a lot of those reactions for sure. Certainly a lot of sadness from his fans and a lot of surprise. Now, not just that Federer is not going to this tournament, this is the first Grand Slam tournament that Federer is going to miss since 1999. He's played in every single Grand Slam tournament from 1999 up till now, a 17-year record. So it is surprising that he won't be there, but of course his health comes first, and all records come to an end eventually, I suppose.
Andrew, I know you're a big tennis fan. Does this indicate maybe that injuries are finally catching up with Federer and that his best days are behind him?
Well, it's, you know, the question that a lot of people are asking on social media now is Federer going to retire, or is Federer maybe going to slow down his pace? I mean, he's still number three in the world, so he's still a very formidable player. But this has been the talk for the past few years. Can Federer win another Grand Slam tournament? Is he potentially going to retire? I think probably Novak Djokovic, although he in recent meetings has no problem beating Federer, I think he's probably happy to hear this only because Novak Djokovic is missing that French Open crown, and then he'll have the career Grand Slam. He will have won all four of those tournaments. But somebody tweeted out, just to give you some perspective, they said that the last time Roger Federer was not in a Grand Slam tournament, Sasha Zverev was 1 year old. Sasha Zverev is a German tennis player ranked 48th in the world, and he's 18 now. So it's, you know, when the last time the Federer wasn't in a tournament, this guy who's ranked 48th in the world was an infant. So it just gives you some perspective on the longevity of Roger Federer's career and the longevity of the streak.
Roger Federer with more Grand Slam titles than any other male player in history, 17.
Yep.
Where do you rank him in the all-time annals, Andrew?
Well, it's one of those things, I think, where, I mean, I'm a big Federer fan, so I will immediately say I think he's the greatest of all time. But that being said, you know, Novak Djokovic, I think, is hot on his heels. The way that Djokovic has been playing, it doesn't seem that anybody can beat him. I think Andy Murray just did in a warm-up tournament, and it was kind of a surprise. And it was in the finals. You know, Novak Djokovic kind of steamrolls his way to the finals every time and usually wins them. So if he can get this crown at Roland Garros, he won three of the four tournaments last year. He only missed the French Open. He almost had the calendar year Grand Slam. Everybody was focused on Serena Williams, but Novak Djokovic won three of four as well. So we'll see. But, I mean, like I said, I'm a Federer fan. I think that his accomplishments, even if his best days are behind him, put him, if not at the top, definitely in the top, you know, three.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Andrew, what else is trending in the sports world?
Well, this past week we had a bit of a scuffle at a baseball game. We joke that, you know, usually hockey is where the fights break out. but this one broke out at a baseball game between the Texas Rangers and the Toronto Blue Jays. And Rangers infielder Rene Odor socked Jose Bautista, who is a Blue Jays player, and really got a clean punch. And this became kind of the social media talk that, oh, you know, Bautista is not a very well-liked player. So there were a lot of people on social media saying, right on, good job that you kind of socked him. But Major League Baseball was not as enthused about this fight. So they've actually handed down some pretty hefty suspensions. Odor is actually going to be suspended for eight games because of this punch. But people were saying, hey, I went to a baseball game and I ended up seeing a fight. Like you said, it's been the talk of the baseball world a little bit on social media for the past week. The one photo of him landing that punch is still being shared around social media.
Yeah, they're even showing it in slow motion on some of these websites.
And we see this from time to time. Like you said, hockey usually is where we see the fights, but occasionally in baseball we have these bench-clearing brawls, and they always capture social media attention because people are getting, you know, punched, and it's just not something you usually see at a baseball game. So people are always, and in this case with players that are very much unliked, I guess you could say, in Bautista's case, it got even more attention for this suspension. But yeah, social media saying for Odor, hey, great job, good way to go. And like I said, MLB not too pleased about that.
Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And we'll see you again on Friday. And that wraps up the May 19th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The people of South Sudan are in trouble. More than two decades of north-south conflict, followed by over 2 years of factional fighting, have further weakened an already fragile nation. The insecurity has limited farmers' access to plant their fields and devastated livestock, resulting in inadequate food production. Today, South Sudan has the world's highest inflation rates. South Sudan's economy is collapsing, its people struggle to find enough to eat, and human rights violations and abuses continue with impunity, said Bob Levitt, USAID Deputy Assistant Administrator for Democracy, Conflict, and Humanitarian Assistance. To date, some 2.5 million South Sudanese have fled their homes in search of food and safe haven from violence. This year, half the country's population, over 6 million people, need humanitarian assistance. The United States is South Sudan's largest donor. Working through the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, and in collaboration with various partners, the U.S. government has so far provided nearly $1.6 billion in humanitarian assistance for conflict-affected people in South Sudan and South Sudanese refugees. But the going has been tough, partly because it is so difficult to reach many of the communities most in need of aid. One of the reasons is because although the parties to the conflict are obligated under the peace agreement to allow humanitarian aid to flow without interference, aid workers continue to deal with lengthy negotiations, numerous checkpoints along major supply routes, and other obstacles, such as informal taxation and harassment, said Deputy Assistant Administrator Levitt. While we have been able to reach communities trapped in the crossfire through ad hoc negotiations, parties to the conflict have not yet demonstrated the political will to grant full and unfettered access nationwide. The United States is committed to helping the people of South Sudan get through this crisis and get back on their feet. We urge the government to prioritize humanitarian access so that we can reach those who most need our help, said Deputy Assistant Administrator Levitt. Our assistance to people in desperate need in South Sudan is saving lives. We will continue to invest in the people of South Sudan and their efforts to build a more prosperous, peaceful future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.